Case number 11-1486 et al. Electric Power Supply Association Petitioner versus Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Mr. Parrish for Petitioners Electric Power Supply Association et al. Mr. Schonkweiler for Petitioners Cassio et al. And Mr. Solomon for Respondent.
May it please the Court. Ashley Parrish on behalf of the petitioners. I've reserved 5 minutes of time for rebuttal. Petitioners raised two principal challenges to the Commission's final rule. One, the Commission has exceeded its jurisdiction. Two, the Commission's compensation scheme is unlawful. Before getting to those two points, though, I think it might help the Court and frame the argument if I could very briefly explain what the Commission is trying to accomplish in its final rule. And I can do that in two quick points. First, everyone agrees that when you're regulating energy prices, there is a trade-off between efficiency and stability. The states and the retail markets have tended to prefer stability. The Commission in the wholesale market has preferred efficiency. What that means is that wholesale markets are dynamic. The prices change all the time. The retail rates do not change in response. Second, for several reasons, the Commission does not like this. As a result, what its final rule is attempting to do is align the retail rates with the wholesale rates when wholesale prices are high. To give you an example, in any particular hour, if a wholesale price is at $50 and the retail price is at $30, the Commission wants to create price incentives so that the retail consumer's opportunity cost of consuming that energy will go up. This is what the Commission calls demand response, and this is what its final rule is about. Now, with that background, if I may, let me turn to my two points. As I mentioned, our first argument is that the Commission doesn't have jurisdiction to do that. As the statute makes very clear, and as courts have held, and this court has held many times, there's a clear, bright line of division of authority between wholesale authority and rates for the Commission and retail rates and retail authority for the states. The whole point of this final rule, as I've just explained, is to regulate retail sales, retail consumption. There's no way of getting around that. And the way that I'd like to emphasize that is to strip away the jargon and take a very close look at exactly what the regulation defines demand response to be. And if I may read that to you, this is on Appendix 25 of our brief. This is 35 CFR 35.28. Demand response means a reduction in the consumption of electric energy by customers from their expected consumption in response to an increase in the price of electric energy or to incentive payments designed to induce lower consumption of electric energy.
I'm a little curious how expected consumption was calculated. In other words, how even under the Commission's view do you avoid someone gaming the system by saying, I was going to consume 100 units, but I'm only going to consume 75 when that's a fiction? How do you avoid that? Is it based on your normal usage? What is the expected, how is expected consumption calculated?
Your Honor, I'm going to be honest with you. I don't really know, but I know what they do is they have the ISOs create an algorithm that says here is what your expected ordinary usage is, and they set a baseline.
God, I hate that word algorithm.
I know. But, Your Honor, I think what they do is they have a way of calculating a baseline.
Nobody seems to challenge it.
No one's challenging that.
No one is challenging it, no. I wish I could be more helpful, but, Your Honor, there's a lot of things about the markets I don't know. What I do know is that this is retail rate regulation. Your Honor, if it made any difference on...
Let's not go too quickly.
Of course, Your Honor.
Okay, I hear your argument, but the Commission's point is that the demand response resources, they're directly participating in the wholesale market, and therefore they're regulatable.
Your Honor is absolutely correct. Okay. I actually think the Commission has two arguments, and that's their first argument. And, Your Honor, our response to that is, I guess, threefold. One is the Supreme Court has been consistently clear, as has this Court, is you can't bootstrap your way into jurisdiction. And so the fact that it's happening in the wholesale markets it can't in and of itself be dispositive. Second, this court and Judge Silberman, your Southern California Edison case makes this very clear. It doesn't matter how the commission characterizes it, whether it calls demand response or retail consumption. It has to actually be within their jurisdiction.
But now, this is not retail consumption.
Well, Your Honor, what it is that, well, let me say what it's not first. The commission agrees that it's not a wholesale sale. They say that in their order, and they also say that in the Energy Connect decision. So they've already said that this is not a wholesale sale, and nobody disputes that this isn't transmission. So what they have to do is, and this gets to their second argument, is to say that this falls within their residual jurisdiction under the statute to deal with practices affecting rates. But my point, Your Honor, is that no matter how you look at this, what they're trying to do at the end of the day, by their own definition, is to align retail rates with wholesale rates by creating an incentive for retail rates to be higher. And so whether you look at this under the authority of you can't do indirectly what you're not permitted to do directly, if you take a look at it under terms of what the express purpose of the regulation is, if you take it a look under the definition, it all comes down to not sales for resale, but everything to do with affecting how retail customers pay for. Yes, Your Honor.
Did you say retail rates higher or lower?
Well, what it does, Your Honor, if I could use my example.
Did you mean to say what the FERC is trying to do is affect retail sales by making them higher?
Yes, Your Honor. If I misspoke, what it's trying to do is if and we have an argument, obviously, about what the compensation level should be, but if the wholesale rate is at 50 and it's at 30, they want to increase the opportunity cost so that effectively the retail customer, instead of paying $30, which the commission thinks is too low, would have to pay some amount higher than that as an opportunity cost in order to consume.
To align the retail rate with the wholesale rate, which temporarily is higher.
You're exactly right, Your Honor. That's exactly right. And really, going back to Judge Edwards, your points, there are really only two arguments that the commission has. One is it has what I think of its bootstrap argument, which is to say, well, this is taking place in the wholesale markets because we made it take place here. And then their second argument is to say, well, this falls under our effect.
They didn't make it take place. They have a scheme which allows for demand response, which is solely within the wholesale market, which they can regulate.
Your Honor, with respect, the statute grants them not authority to regulate the markets, and it's not like the markets themselves are two different things. What they have authority, they have authority to regulate
right.
wholesale rates, which is sales for resale. And as we point out,
this
in our,
is clearly regulating the rates. It's a practice that regulates the rates, affects the rates.
Exactly, Your Honor. But the reason it does that is for two things. One is that the markets themselves, everyone agrees that retail rates undoubtedly affect wholesale rates. So the argument that there's an effect is purely based on the fact that that's just the nature of markets. And the Congress has made a decision to draw a bright line that says, nonetheless, we keep these separate.
That's not helping me. I understand all of that. But I still don't understand why, when they're doing what they're doing on the demand response, and they're within their realm of jurisdiction, and they're regulating the wholesale rate, why is that impermissible? That's what they're regulating, not the retail rate.
Well, Your Honor, what they're doing is they are paying retail customers in the wholesale market not to consume energy. That is not the wholesale rate. The wholesale rate is the rate that's being paid for consumptions of energy
for retail.
They're
paying folks who would otherwise be in the retail market. They're giving them an incentive to join the wholesale. What's impermissible about that?
Well, Your Honor, it's just let me make two points. One is if this is true, then there is no limit to the jurisdiction, meaning, as we mentioned in our briefs, input.
But aren't there some entities that, without this rule, can be perceived as participating in both wholesale and retail?
Well, no, Your Honor.
No?
I think the only reason let's hold aside these rules. The only reason that demand response providers are in the wholesale.
No, you're not answering my question because I heard what you were saying. Aren't there some entities that, without regard to this rule, are sometimes in retail, sometimes in wholesale?
No, Your Honor, but let me explain why. Is it obviously, before this rule, there are programs in place, but the demand aggregators that they are compensating here, they're in this market and getting paid purely because they are aggregating retail customers and promising the commission that they will consume less energy. That it is not like they are generators or otherwise in the markets. But Your Honor, if I can make my second point, which
are
is
generators
that,
never in the retail market?
Well, not.
Are generators never in the retail market? Of course they are.
You're
they are sometimes, right? Say yes.
Well,
Yes. They are.
Of course, when they buy their own station bomber.
I don't understand why. You're flying a false argument to try and make your point. And that you're totally distracting when you make the argument you're making, because you can have entities that can be in both.
Yes, Your Honor, but let me get to my second point, which is that if you're in the retail markets, the state regulators could not create retail supply response. They could regulate the generators while the generators are purchasing energy at retail, but they could not bring the generators into the retail market and say to them, we're going to set up an auction for you to produce energy for wholesale sales. And the reason is because it's not just a question of the two markets, it's a question of what you're regulating. And so, Your Honor, the reason, and I'm really not trying to be confrontational.
No,
but
you're being very nice. It's all right.
But the reason why I'm firm on this is because what the commission has done is created sort of a part of the wholesale market that he called parts of the wholesale market, but its only purpose is to reduce retail consumption, and that's a bootstrap, and they cannot do that. Otherwise, they could regulate coal, they could regulate labor wages, they could regulate any form of input. Now, the commission says, oh, we haven't done that yet, but the thing to recognize under the statute is that these inputs, those are not the extreme case.
Could the commission, without regard to this program, regulate the participants who you would agree are within the wholesale market? How much the system operators, could the system operators say, you can only offer X amount? Because that will affect your rates. We're not going to let you do more than that.
Only if it wasn't relating to consumption. The commission.
Well, it's obviously going to relate to consumption. But if the system operator says to the generators, you cannot offer more than X, that's going to affect consumption.
So, Your Honor.
Right?
Yes.
All right. So you made another categorical statement that's just wrong. You're saying the commission is off because they're affecting retail consumption, but you agree the commission can do that when there's no demand resource program in place.
Your Honor, the reason why it affects retail consumption is because any regulation of the wholesale markets and will have an effect on the retail markets and vice versa. What the commission cannot do under the statute is it cannot regulate retail consumption. It can only regulate transmission and sales for resale. So as soon as the commission goes beyond that in any
way.
They're
not regulating retail consumption. They're just offering an incentive for some who would otherwise be retail consumers to join the wholesale market.
Your Honor, respectfully, no. What they're doing under their definition is they are reducing consumption of electric energy by customers from their expected consumption in response to an increase in price.
It's not a forced reduction. No one has to participate in this. They're not required. No one can be lifted out of the retail market and penalized if they don't join. It's just an incentive program, join or not.
Yes, Your Honor, and it's an incentive program to reduce retail consumption. And I go back to my point.
Yeah, but see, the problem I'm having with that argument is you just conceded that without this program, they could achieve exactly the same result, affect retail consumption by just regulating the generators and how much they were going to be allowed to put out.
Your Honor, with respect, I did not concede that point, and let me explain what I'm trying to make the difference is. The distinction is that there will always be an interplay between the wholesale markets and the retail markets. That is inevitable, and there will always be an effect whether you're regulating what you're supposed to be regulating or not. What is wrong here is that the commission is using that as a reason to go ahead and put price incentives that are designed to do only one thing, which is to change the effective retail rate so that consumption goes down. And that is no different in kind and effect than if the commission itself was to actually issue an order that was to say retail rates must be, you know, X dollars.
Okay. We have used up all of your time talking about whether or not the commission
right,
can do
true.
This at all.
Right.
And I want to get to a different part of this, which is assuming they could, what they've done here by requiring payment of full LMP, and I understand there's an argument that that overcompensates, you know, assuming that they can do it at all. But I guess my question is, the commission seems to have recognized that and has come up with this net benefits calculation. So why doesn't that fix the problem?
Yes, Your Honor. So the net benefits test is not an offset, so it doesn't fix the problem all the time. All it does is say that we will pay what we are explaining as being overcompensation less often than we otherwise would, which means in certain circumstances where prices are being decreased. So the point is that we make in our brief is that you can't avoid undue discrimination by just saying we will unduly discriminate some of the time. And so, and if I may, Your Honor, just to put a point on it, they really have, again, only three arguments on why they think that the full wholesale payment is correct. One, the net benefits test that you just, Your Honor, just raised, and then two others. One is they say market imperfections. It's unclear what they mean by that. They either mean one of two things. Either that there is an imperfection between the retail market and the wholesale market, in which case it's no answer because either proposal will address that. Or they're talking about some other market imperfections, but they never explain what that is. And then the third argument that they put the most weight on is to say that, well, we don't look at costs of production. We don't look at the difference costs of production for generators, so why should we do that for retail customers? But there is no. The only reason you have this fiction is to align the prices, not because you actually care about retail customers participating in the wholesale markets. And so there is no cost of production for retail consumers because they're not producing anything. So if you're going to align the prices, that needs to be the justification for paying compensation, not that you're going to treat them similarly. And in fact, what happens is the commission some of the time wants to treat the consumers similarly and other time wants to treat them differently, which is why it applies the net benefits test, which we see as a concession that paying the full wholesale rate is improper. And if I could just, I think this is helpful, at least it was to me, that again, if you think of why we're right here, if you have the $50 and $30 example and you want the consumer to consume at the $50 level by aligning, you pay the consumer $20 more so that the opportunity cost is $50. What the commission wants to do is pay $50 more, which means that it's now at $80. And what this has the effect of doing is that instead of aligning the markets, it distorts them. And it also results in a situation where you have discrimination because generators can't compete. And it acts as a market mitigation measure that has never been analyzed by the commission. I appreciate the court's question. And if there's more questions, I'd be happy to answer them. Or maybe I'll sit down and save my time for rebuttal.
When you come back, you ought to raise the gears so that you don't have to bend over so much.
Thank you, Your Honor. You're right. Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the Court, Dan Schonkweiler for the California ISO. I've reserved 2 minutes of my time for rebuttal. Judge Brown, the question you asked about how much to pay demand response resources affects five FERC jurisdictional system operators with electricity markets. The sixth market, the California ISO, is affected by the issue of how to allocate those costs to the other market participants. Before Order 745, the California ISO, at significant expense, developed a comprehensive program for demand response resources. The cornerstones of that were, one, we pay demand response the full LMP, the price of energy, and two, we allocate a set of rates about how to allocate those costs to other market participants. FERC accepted that the tariff for that program is just and reasonable in July 2010. Less than 9 months later, FERC issued Order 745, which includes a regulation of setting a particular way to allocate the cost to market participants. That aspect of Order 745 violates the Federal Power Act, which does not give FERC authority to require that all rates match its current policy preferences. Before FERC requires a utility to file a particular rate, FERC must find that the existing rates, and they may find this either generically or specifically, violate the Federal Power Act, either that they're unjust and unreasonable or unduly discriminatory, et cetera. So Order 745 does not make those findings, and even if those findings could be implied, they're not explained as required by the Federal Power Act. Before I go into that argument, though, I want to touch briefly on FERC's suggestion that California's petitions are premature. California's challenges are ripe now because they're purely legal and they don't require further record development. All the court needs to decide to resolve our appeals is whether the orders contain the findings required by Section 206 and the explanations required by Section 206.
So you're essentially, assuming you're right on Liz's last point, you're essentially arguing that if FERC does to you, that is your client, what they have proposed to do, there has to be a new hearing with respect to California, a new proceeding.
A new proceeding either with respect to California or other existing rates, whether they want to proceed generically or specifically, about whether the rate we have in place is unjust and unreasonable.
And you're relying principally on the fact that what you have done was initially endorsed by FERC.
That's correct.
In place, and the subsequent determination with respect to demand response should not affect you, even though they are arguing that it is generic?
No, actually, maybe. We're challenging, the way I put it is we're challenging the rulemaking and not how that rule applies to the California ISO. We want to say that the regulation about cost allocation adopted in Order 745, that there's not an adequate foundation for it. There's no 206 finding as required by Atlantic City, among others, Atlantic City Electric. FERC must first find before it adopts.
Oh, you think they have to go jurisdiction by jurisdiction?
No, they can do this generically,
right?
As suggested in a couple of cases. And the generic finding would be similar to what FERC said about the compensation rate. If you go to the paragraphs in Order 745 about the compensation rate, they very carefully explain that not only is the rate they want, the LMP, just and reasonable, but any alternative rate would be unjust and unreasonable. Mm-hmm. There is no finding like that for cost allocation. The only thing that's said is that FERC has a preferred rate that it believes is just and reasonable.
Okay, so you're saying the generic rule insofar as it pertains to cost allocation is what you're challenging?
That's correct.
Not the unfairness of California being swept in. You agree you could be swept in by this new rule, but you're trying to avoid a particular problem by saying one piece of the rule, cost allocation, cannot be justified.
And was not justified. There were no predicate under 206. And our brief cited a number of cases where this court has held that you challenge the rule in a rulemaking on appeal from the rulemaking, and you challenge the application of the rule in the compliance docket. And in fact, if we waited until the compliance docket to challenge the application of the rule, we would lose that appeal. So turning to the merits, on rehearing, both California petitioners argued that FERC had not made the findings required by Section 206, and if they had, those findings weren't adequately explained. The rehearing order responds by simply asserting that FERC says we did make the required findings in some unspecified prior paragraph. The problem is the other findings about cost allocation only go to whether FERC's preferred policy is just and reasonable. There's nothing to address the status of existing rates, and in fact, some things there's some tension there. Given all the circumstances, FERC needed to say much more than it did. And of course, one of those circumstances is having approved a rate for the California ISO only 9 months before. And it seems like if they're going to proceed generically and find that any alternative rate is unjust and unreasonable, they must, at a minimum, address instances where they've approved alternative rates. That's just like on the compensation side, where they're addressing a PJM case. You know, did we prove this? Did we not? What changed? But there's no explanation of what had changed in the 9 months since a rate was approved for the California ISO. The second circumstance that calls out for explanation is a departure from Order 719. Contrary to what's suggested in FERC's brief, Order 719 is not merely silent on the question of how to allocate the costs of demand response. It affirmatively required each system operator to adopt its own protocols and tariffs about what FERC called the problem of double payment or double counting. And so the California ISO did that and addressed that problem through its cost allocation rate. There's nothing in the orders to explain what changed in 2 years to suddenly require a uniform national rule about cost allocation. There are passages that address the need for a uniform rule about compensation, but none of those go, there's no obvious connection between that and any purported need for a uniform national rule about cost allocation. Third and last, there's tension within the orders themselves on review because FERC made statements that are irreconcilable on their face about the status of existing tariffs. On the one hand, FERC clearly wants to displace existing tariffs, including about cost allocation, when the price is above this net benefits threshold. But at the same time, they've said when the price drops below the net benefits threshold by as little as a penny, the existing tariffs remain in place and remain effective. That difference, if they're finding the existing tariffs to be unjust and unreasonable, there needs to be an explanation about what difference the price makes and how they suddenly become just and reasonable when the price drops just a little. There are passages that address the effective price on compensation, of course, but there's nothing to address the effect of the price on cost allocation. So given all the the tensions, what I contend is the abrupt departure, I think there's a lot to explain and the need to turn square corners here, and I don't think Order 745 did that. Thank you.
Thank you, Council.
May it please the court, Robert Solomon for the commission. And if I may, I'll proceed in the order of arguments as they were presented by petitioners. As to the threshold issue of jurisdiction, what is important to keep in mind...
I have a question right at the outset. Why in your brief do you refer to the petitioners as generators? Is that because you think that's a bad pejorative
No, it is not.
The LLCs are part of the petitioners group too.
Nothing pejorative, nothing insulting. The orders differentiate between traditional generation resources and demand-side resources, non-generation resources. We were thinking of calling them suppliers, but of course demand response providers are also suppliers to the same extent generators are.
Could FERC have simply directed the ISOs to give a credit to any consumer who determined that it would not take as much retail purchase as it was expected to?
Arguably, yes, but that would be a more difficult case for asserting...
Arguably, yes.
Yes, because in that case, there would be a regulation of the retail rate that the end-use customer is either paying for energy that it consumes or savings that the end-use customer...
Why wouldn't that be a direct regulation of retail sales?
Well, I said arguably. It probably...
Probably would violate the law, right?
That would be more of an intrusion into retail regulation.
Well, I put it to you that it's really economically no different, that this selling into the wholesale market is a bit of a fiction. And it's exactly the same economically as the hypothetical I gave you.
It is a bit of a fiction, and that is why the Commission in its 2010 Energy Connect case did not characterize the demand response supply as the economic equivalent as a wholesale sale, as the experts in the proceeding below, Alfred Kahn in particular.
So the consumer is really not in the wholesale market at all?
Under
the demand response.
Well, the consumer can be in both the retail market.
No, but in this case, when they're exercising their demand response option, they're not really in the wholesale market at all.
No, they are in the wholesale market.
Why would you just say they weren't?
Because in the circumstance that is present here, the end-use customer, probably through a third-party aggregator, is directly and affirmatively bidding into the FERC jurisdictional wholesale market. That entity...
Why don't you disagree that was a fiction?
The only thing I was disagreeing was the fact that it would be a sale, but from an equivalence perspective, from a comparability perspective, I do agree with you that there is no difference. And, of course, that's the entire basis for the Commission's compensation at the locational marginal price, because effectively, for purposes of the value that the resource provides to the system, functionally, there is no difference between the resource bid into the market by a demand response provider or a resource bid into the market by a traditional generation provider. Either way...
I have real difficulty. If FERC can order the ISO to compensate the consumer for reducing its demand from the LSE, don't see why that's not a regulation of retail sales.
Because all the commission is doing is luring or incenting a retail consumer to voluntarily enter into the wholesale market. There's nothing wrong with a consumer undertaking both wholesale and retail activity. There's nothing wrong with a service having both a wholesale and a retail component. The focus of the Federal Power Act is whether there is a wholesale sale. There's no reference in the statute to retail. The reference in the statute is to whether there is a wholesale sale. Any other sale is that which is outside Federal Power Act jurisdiction. For purposes of the demand response provider, the commission is not characterizing that input as a sale. The commission is characterizing that input into the computer model, I don't want to use that word you don't want me to use, as a...
Was that the A word?
Yes, it was. As a practice affecting rates. Now, Mr. Parrish argues that if the commission gets away with this, there's no end to any number of practices that the commission might sweep under its jurisdictional ambit. That's certainly not true. The commission is hanging its jurisdictional hat on the fact that there is a direct and a substantial effect on the wholesale price. We admit the case law is rather clear that if the effect is indirect or remote, that in and of itself is not sufficient for the exercise of FERC jurisdiction.
Now, as I understand, the reason this is different from the crediting example, is, at least as I understand it, if the demand response bid is higher than the generator's bid, it's not going to be accepted.
That is correct.
And if the bid is lower, it still needs to satisfy the net benefits effect, a test.
Yes.
So they're clearly within the market and that market regulation, whereas accrediting would not engage any of those requirements.
Thank you, Your Honor. The key is engaging the requirements of the wholesale market.
They are in there competing against the generators.
Exactly. Right. And competing against the generators, they have to abide by all of the wholesale market rules.
The other thing I want to make sure I'm clear on is, as in my little charting of this thing, I thought if it worked the way the commission was talking about, I think your opposition suggested it forces the rates up. My understanding is the opposite, that if the demand response program works the way the commission has in mind, it forces the wholesale rate down, which in turn one would assume would benefit the retail market.
Yes and yes. The Petitioner's Council is focusing on the commission's intention to align wholesale and retail markets. The commission's motivation is Congress's motivation in the 2005 statute, which is to identify and to eliminate unnecessary burdens. And Your Honor is correct. What the commission found is if the demand response providers are able to participate, are able to bid into the wholesale market according to the same rules and the same terms as the traditional generation resources, that likely will have the effect of lowering wholesale prices.
Because you're getting rid of the higher costing generation, the inefficient generators who would otherwise have to participate.
Yes, Your Honor, because of the upward sloping supply curve, the last increment of demand, if reduced, might result in a disproportionately large reduction in the wholesale price, because typically that last increment, that last unit of demand, is served by the least efficient most costly generating units, and now the generators will realize the avoided costs of having to dispatch those higher priced units.
Isn't it fair to say that the LSEs, load serving entities, are part of the petitioners group here because they're concerned about the distribution of cost amongst retail customers? Isn't that correct? And that retail customers who can't take advantage of this demand response will be disadvantaged.
Well, true, retail customers who are not able to take advantage will be disadvantaged, but that's primarily the focus of the state retail regulatory authority. The states at the retail level remain able to determine whether a retail end-use customer is eligible to participate in the wholesale market. That was the focus of the prior rule. And even if they are allowed to participate in the wholesale market, as Judge Edwards indicated, they still have to satisfy all of the requirements of the tariff, and they have to satisfy the requirements that the commission added. Chief among them is the cost effectiveness test. The demand response resource has to demonstrate that it is providing a benefit to the system, which is what you see at the upper end of the supply curve when it goes exponentially high and vertical, perhaps at the lower end when the supply curve is more horizontal, you will not realize those benefits. As to valuation, I think the analogy of Dr. Kahn was particularly apt. He made the analogy to a pair of scissors with two blades. The blades move in opposite directions, but collectively they operate for the common good. For purposes of value to the system, that is why the process prior to our rulemakings, and indeed continuing after our rulemakings, focus on marginal value. The locational marginal price is the marginal value of serving the system. Sure, any resource, whether a generation resource or a demand response resource, will have different costs, and because of the different costs, that the bid might be different, or the bid, if accepted, might be more profitable. But regardless of the costs incurred by the demand response providers, and my interveners, the demand response providers, would argue that they incur costs just as much as generators do, including lost opportunity costs, the focus of the locational marginal price is to provide a comparable price to all successful bidders, regardless of what their bid is, regardless of their level of costs, because they all provide comparable value to the system. And finally, with respect to the California argument, California is arguing that the commission was not properly attentive enough to the effect of the rule on the California scheme. The commission has made both generic findings, which California indicates can be appropriate in our rule, but we've also made specific findings as to California. In the rule, we indicated that five different methods of cost allocation were presented, and the commission, not surprisingly, adopted the principle that the cost should be allocated according to those who benefit. That is the court rule concerning allocation of costs and benefits. With respect to California itself, the commission issued an order on December 15th, 2011. This is the same day we issued our order on rehearing, where we made California-specific findings in that separate standalone order, indicating that California's existing tariff did not satisfy the general principle in the rulemaking. We also issued two California-specific orders on July 18th of this year. In one of those orders, we denied rehearing, and California has filed a petition for review in 13-1251, where they have presented this court with the December 2011 order and the July 2011 order. The commission also issued a second order in July of this year. I'm surprised California did not submit that order as well to the court, where we accepted an alternative cost allocation scheme proffered by California. So all of California's California-specific arguments are presented and discussed in California-specific orders, and as appropriate, those orders can be reviewed in due course by this court. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Solomon. Again, no one has any time, but we'll give you a minute to summarize.
Great. Let me see if I can address 3 points in that minute. First of all, Your Honor, it's very telling that opposing counsel talked about luring the retail customers into the wholesale markets. What's key there is the mechanism for luring is to change the rate. It's all prices that are being used to lure. Second of all, Judge Edwards, we're talking about the effects of the wholesale market, but I just want to reemphasize that everybody agrees that retail rates affect wholesale rates and vice versa, so they have to identify some effect that goes beyond what the effect of the retail rate itself is. They have not done that. They cannot do this. And as a result, all of this effects that they're talking about between the two markets is just a result of the scheme that Congress set up. And then lastly, we talked about the benefit to the retail markets. So let's be very clear here that when we're talking about benefits, we're talking about efficiency benefits, and we're all in favor of that, except the states that have to make that trade-off, as I told you, between efficiency and stability. And so when we're talking about the benefits to the retail markets, what we're talking about is wiping out the choices that the states have made. That's not within their jurisdiction, but if you're going to do it, at least get the pricing right. He has no answer to the fact that the net benefits test is a stopgap measure that allows discrimination for some of the time, just not all the time, and that's unlawful. Thank you, Your Honors. We appreciate the time.
Thank you.
Your Honors, California's appeal is not about the effects of the rulings on California. We want to challenge the regulation itself. We don't want that regulation to be fixed in place so that it can't be changed and then applied to California's rate.
But did they give you a later order?
They gave us a compliance docket order, but what we want to avoid is what happened to Pacific Gas and Electric in a case cited on page 6 of our reply brief. PG&E was subject to a rulemaking. This was about generator interconnection. They didn't challenge the rulemaking. They filed the appeal in their compliance docket, which is what FERC suggests here. And the court held it was too late to challenge the rule. The rule is fixed. We want the rule. It's on page JA-166, it's Part B on cost allocation. That's what we want vacated or remanded for more explanation.
And then you still want to preserve your opportunity, if you lose that, to challenge the adjustment, alleged adjustment, that they've made for you.
We have filed a protective appeal, depending on the outcome of this case. Thank you.
Thank you. Case will be submitted.